Hey, it's Bubba Wallace from 2311 Racing. You know what it feels like forever? Sitting on a plane waiting for takeoff. Good thing I've got Chumba Casino. With daily boosts and social casino games on tap, this is the kind of fun that makes time fly. Why not turbocharge your downtime? Play now at ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
Sponsored by Chumba Casino. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Our yoga instructor challenged us to find inner peace. I found it faster than anyone. After 4 seconds, I stood up and screamed,
I found nirvana! I win!
They asked me to leave. I guess they don't respect winning. Bet365 does, though. New customers get $200 in bonus bets just for betting $10. Namaste, losers. Bet365. Winning is everything. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-MY-RESET. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In-app only.
And welcome in to hour number two. Darren Donick and Chase. Willie Donick, Darren McFarland here with you today. A little later in the show, we'll check in with Max Hurst. A really outstanding performance last night. Thrown into the fire with Pete Weber sidelined with the COVID. And, of course, it's just happening all around us, as we know, with everybody coming on, going off of the list, if you will. Pete should be back, we hope, by Saturday, and he'll be raring to go. But in the meantime, excellent job by Max. We'll check in with him a little bit later. It was a classic game last night between the Predators and the Avalanche. We'll also be talking to Tim Hasselbeck a little later this hour. We'll check in with him a little bit away from his normal time slot, so just make the adjustment there. You always want to hear from Tim. As we take a look at Wild Card Weekend and the outlook for the Titans.
What changed with the Giants yesterday? We got off the air. I thought Joe Judge had kept his job, and
yeah,
lo and behold, Joe. Yeah, he's been shown the door.
That's too bad. I mean, you think about that, though. I mean, what a whirlwind. You think you're okay, and then you're not. But really, with a new GM coming in there,
yeah,
was he going to make it? That's just tough. And at the end of the day, I think the court of public opinion, I think the Giants fans were ready to move on.
I don't think there's any doubt.
It stinks, though. You just never get time to build when you get down to it. I had a great conversation with Floyd Reese a long time ago when he first joined the show. So I don't remember the exact year, but it was the year that the Browns hired Paul DePodesta. Okay, remember the movie Moneyball with Brad Pitt? Jonah Hill is the right-hand man, right? The guy that says, what does he do? He gets on base. That guy, right? Paul DePodesta.
Mm-hmm.
That character, Jonah Hill, his name is Paul DePodesta, and the Browns hired him from baseball to be the analytics guy to rebuild the Browns. Mm-hmm. You remember these days?
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
But what they did was they started wielding what they could. They started trading what they could trade to pick up assets to rebuild the team. And I was like, you know, here's a really interesting outside-the-box strategy. Maybe this will work. Nothing else has worked for the Browns here recently, so what the heck? Worth a try. So I remember telling Floyd, hey, you know, I've been studying this money ball. It works really well in baseball. A lot of teams are doing that now, this analytics stuff. And, you know, it's going to take a few years. I was like, it's probably going to take a couple years for the Browns to see it. And then he goes, they'll all get fired. I was like, what? I was like, well, what if you do this? And what if I did this and I did this? He goes, you're fired. You don't get that much time in the NFL. And you know what? That's 100% right. They just don't give you time to build very often in the NFL. If something's not working after like 2 years or, I mean, maybe 3 years, they're moving on. They're trying something else. It may not be the best way to do things, but that is how they do it.
Well,
Paul
I don't know.
DePodesta, by the way, he never saw the fruits of anything for the Browns. He was out of there and back to baseball.
Yeah, I don't think you're actually, you know, you're painting the exact picture of how this works. Sometimes it's not just strictly on, oh, you know, you've got this X amount of time. It better be really good, or you're gone. Like that's.
But that is how it seems.
Well, it seems, but you know how this works. I mean, it's behind the scenes. I mean, it's people. You're around people every single day, and you see how they operate. And you see, look, everybody in their workplace knows that works with somebody. For everybody knows everybody's warts, right? Like everybody's got warts. Like everybody's got deficiencies. Everybody's got strengths and everybody's got weaknesses. I mean, there is no, you know, there is nobody that's just, oh my gosh, they're unbelievable. Like they do everything right. I mean, just rose petals fall right in front of them. It's magical when they walk through the workplace. No, there are people that are better at it than others. And then there are also people that you know what everybody's weakness is. You know what everybody, you know, drops the ball on or what they struggle with or what's not exactly their strength. And then you have to then weigh all that, how that works. So do their strengths outweigh their weaknesses? Do they do this right? Do they not do this right? Can they overcome this? And that's how it works. I mean, we see it all the time, and it's typically because something's going on behind the scenes, or it's power struggle. Power struggle is a part of this. I mean, when you read the stuff about Brian Flores, it seems like him and the GM Greer were butting heads. They weren't getting along, and that happens in the workplace too, right? Not everybody gets along. Not everybody is buddy-buddy. And so, you know, when you're a general manager and head coach, you need to have a relationship, and sometimes that relationship gets strained, or it's just you guys will never see eye to eye. And so that's what's
I think
Joe Judge, if the what I've read to this point, and we can ask Tim, it seemed like he didn't agree with kind of the direction. He wanted more say. I mean, you know, this we hear this stuff all the time. And I guess they were willing to do it, and then they decided to go back on it. I don't know. Like I said, we'll get the better story from Tim Hasselbeck, but there's a lot of things that go into it. Mike Mularkey won a playoff game here. And the Titans have been bad for a long time. And you know what? He was shown the door. He won a playoff game and was shown the door.
You know, you got to give him some of the credit for building the foundation and bringing them out of the doldrums, right? He was picking up the pieces from the bottom when he took over for Ken Whisenhunt, and that whole disaster, that couldn't sink a whole lot lower, and he got him back to respectability, and then he got shown the door. But you do admire the organizations that can build through, you know, they can get relationships that everybody is working together. That does make it pretty special. There's still a huge value in just having everybody for the common goal, able to communicate. I don't think anybody agrees on everything. You know, the coach and GM, I'm sure, disagree a lot, but the good ones can, you know, find a way to get constructive things out of those conversations, even when there are disagreements. And you don't get into the old power struggle to where people are pulling in different directions, because that's never good. But it is interesting to look, especially at football, you see some organizations that go through the cycles, and it seems to be the same cycle every 2 to 4 years. The same thing happens.
Yep.
How long has Washington been in these cycles? The Bears have been in these cycles. You know, they might have a good year pop up every now and then. Heck, if in the NFL, if you don't have a good year pop up every 5 or 6 years, just out of luck, with the way the parity is shaped, I mean, that should happen to everybody. Everybody should have their turn at success. But it is amazing how some of these franchises can never get it right.
You want to hear a common thread? Typically, this is in the sports world, this is in the business world. Typically, when you have weak leadership, you have lots of turnover. Either good people in the workplace,
and it becomes a vicious cycle.
They leave because they see weakness at the top, weak leadership, weakness at the top, and like, I can't succeed here. Or when you have weak leadership, you have weak people in charge, you see a lot of turnover because they're always blaming somebody for the deficiencies of the organization, right? The business or, in this case, in sports. And so typically when you say Washington, okay, that's true. What's the common thread with Washington? What do we always say when we say Washington?
At the top. The guy at the top. It's been chronicled what the environment looks like in there. It doesn't look very admirable. Now, let me tie it into something. Let's tie two discussions into one, Darren. I got a question for you that my son brought up to me when we were watching the classic game on Sunday night, the Raiders and the Chargers. He asked me this: will Marcus Mariota be a starting quarterback in the league next year for somebody?
No.
No? No. I mean, I think he is right now an ideal backup. I think we would all agree on that. If he's your backup, hey, I like him as the backup. I love him as the backup. Great team guy. Could come in and contribute with this package of wildcat plays that they've got. That's not bad at all. You know, especially for the right price, if he's not ruining your budget. But with all of the teams, inevitably, that A, what we just talked about, always seem to be in a cycle of, oh my gosh, we don't have a plan. We need a quarterback. We don't have a quarterback. And the fact that there just aren't very many great quarterbacks. Why not Marcus Mariota? Don't you think he could end up as a starter? You don't think anybody would offer him to be the starter just as a stopgap, a Teddy Bridgewater type of guy? Like Teddy Bridgewater will end up with a job somewhere, either as a excellent backup or stopgap starter. I don't think Mariota is that different than Bridgewater. Do you?
I really see some comparisons.
Like yeah. that, yeah, Mariota's highs are at least as high as Bridgewater.
They're not starters in the league. That's my whole hesitation.
Well, not
that's
ideally, but there's 32
they're not
jobs.
Starters in the league.
But but there are 32 jobs, and there aren't 32 guys to the caliber you're talking about.
They're backups. No, that's not about.
Ideally,
caliber.
They're backups. So somebody has to start. Somebody has to start for some of these teams.
Well, yeah, and guys get drafted every single year, so new crop of quarterbacks come into the league.
But that's the unique thing about this year is you don't have that group this year. Who are the guys? Who's going to start that just got done with the college season? Who's going to start in the NFL next season?
Well, there'll be all kinds.
As a rookie.
All these guys are going to get drafted. Doesn't mean they're going to be good.
Okay, well, you just named one. Okay, there's Pickett.
Drafted.
There's one. But who else besides Pickett?
Matt Corral at Ole Miss, he's going to get drafted. The guy at Liberty,
okay,
he's
so he's
get drafted.
A day one starter. Okay, they're all going to get drafted. Are they going to start? They're going to start for your team next year.
Well,
that's not what everybody's saying anyway. I'm just listening to what the scouts say.
You asked me if Marcus Mariota is going to be a starter, and maybe he will. I'm telling you, he's not a starter, so it would be a mistake.
Well, no, I think we have gone over that, you know, a million times.
I think we've covered that.
Our value. We have watched him very closely in the microscope. We know what type of talent he is. I just wondered if he gets a crack somewhere. I think people would have said that Ryan Tannehill was in that same mix. You know, I don't know. I don't think he's going to be a guy that could really move the needle for you. But we see Ryan Tannehill sort of reinvented himself here, and he's looked upon in a different light. I just wonder if Mariota could ever get to that point with a new leash. Like, he's been a solid backup for the Raiders. He'll be in this game. He will go into the game in Cincinnati for some key plays. He might make a big play as a backup in that role.
He's a solid backup. He's just a gadget guy. That's it. I mean, he's just a gadget guy.
No, but if he – right, because Carr has stayed healthy.
He runs a wild card or wildcat, he just comes in and direct snap, and he takes off running.
Yes.
I mean, he's a runner.
Let me ask you this question. If Ryan Tannehill had missed three games – who would you rather have coming in to be the backup, Mariota or Logan Woodside? We don't know what Logan Woodside would have done or not.
I was saying it's hard for me to say anything about Logan Woodside because I just don't know. I have to defer to Mike Vrabel and the coaching staff and the Titans organization because they've been around him for years and they keep trotting him out there as the backup. They don't have to use him, and
well, that's
they
the thing.
Stay with him. So I don't know.
That
I
also mean, might be the best
like
thing.
Him.
That also, by the way, might be the best thing you could say about Tannehill's season is that he stayed out there and he got him through the fire. Because if he goes down on top of all the other people that went down, I don't know if they could have won a game with all the other pieces that had fallen around them when they were trying to fight their way.
It'd be tough.
So that you got to tip your hat to Tannehill there. And so, you know, let's keep that aside. But my point is, it's a nice feeling to know that you've got a guy in Mariota. He'd have to rank up there among the top backups, just like Teddy Bridgewater. I'd love to have him as my backup, ideally. He's not the ideal starter, but there's always between 6 and 10 teams in the league that don't have the ideal starter. They're still looking around. They've got to have somebody in the meantime. That's what I see Mariota maybe getting a chance. down the road. I'm just curious to see if it ever happens for him.
You're not factoring in that, you know, probably Jimmy Garoppolo will be out in San Francisco and he'll be he'll get the opportunity to be a starter somewhere else and he'll be replaced by Trey Lance. So that is a starting position that'll get filled by Jimmy Garoppolo. So, I mean, that's what I'm saying.
What if the 49ers win a couple of games in the playoffs? Do you think they'll move on from Garoppolo then?
Do you remember Alex Smith's last year in Kansas City?
He had a career year.
Career year. He was unbelievable. And he was shown the door in the offseason.
Yeah. But I think they had a pretty good sense that Mahomes was something special.
San Francisco traded up for Trey Lance.
But they've now had a year to look and see what do we have. Like the Packers drafted Jordan Love. Do you think they're really feeling good about life after Aaron Rodgers? Well, that's what I'm saying. Just because you have the guy, you drafted the guy. I don't know what the 49ers feel, how confident they feel that Lance will be able to be an upgrade down the road. I'm sure they ideally hope. These are all just questions that I have. The quarterback thing fascinates me. And also you pair it with what we just talked about. The organizations, a lot of times in the league, they fail to end up having a good plan. They're constantly scrapping the old plan. They're bringing in a new coach. That also makes it tough, I think, for these quarterbacks to go in and succeed. That's why we love the league, though.
Yeah. No,
You never know.
I understand. And by the way,
like, look at the Colts now and the commitment they made to Carson Wentz and where they're sitting right now.
And there's people like me that aren't surprised. That's why I didn't pick the Colts in the playoffs. When they traded for Carson Wentz, what did I say about Carson Wentz? I was like, I'll have to see it to believe it, that he's good. Did I once praise, like, oh, my gosh, here comes Indy? No. I said, I don't believe in Carson Wentz. I don't see a guy that – I'm not convinced. I need to see it to believe it.
All right.
It played out that way. I didn't pick the Colts in the playoffs.
Yeah. All right, I'm asking you another question now. If you're the Colts and you see Wentz, you're stuck with him. What if you could get Mariota as a budget backup to sort of push him a little bit? Is that an upgrade? Over Eason or the – because one of the things –
Sam Ellinger. I don't know how they feel about Ellinger. I don't have any idea what they think of him.
I think we have an idea.
Well, how do we know? I mean, Carson Wentz played all year.
Well, he played on two ankles that he shouldn't have been, you know, should not have played against the Titans early in the season. I think that gave us a pretty good idea of what they think of the other guys. They had the whole preseason when he had a foot problem to look at these guys. I'm just thinking, what do you do if you're in the situation where you don't have the perfect quarterback? You don't have an acceptable quarterback. And there's not another replacement that's obvious, or you're tied to that guy contractually. Let's throw that at Tim. There's no easy answer. I don't know if I have the answer. I'm very curious to see what the Colts do.
Well, it doesn't matter. I mean, they're stuck. It's like the Titans with Julio Jones. Like, we could talk about, you know, can he do anything? Can he salvage? They're stuck. I mean, he's going to be back next year. They're married to him, just like the Colts are married to Carson Wentz. Like, it really doesn't matter. Like, they're tied at the hip. That's who they're going to trot out next year, and I suspect they'll spend all offseason trying to figure out how do we get him better. How do we make him better? We've got a running game. We've got an offensive line. We've got a defense. We've got a good nucleus of a team. How do we get better play out of our quarterback? And they'll spend all offseason doing that. But it's not like the strategy is going to be, okay, who's the backup we can target to push Carson Wentz? I don't think that's the strategy. I think it's just going to be we've got to figure out what's a system.
I'm surprised to hear you say this. Knowing what you've said about the backup quarterback and how you have lobbied for the Titans to have a stronger backup, wouldn't that be what you would say about the Colts? Is it might be nice to have a stronger backup. Wentz does get hurt a lot.
Yeah, you're asking me about the backup here. I mean, that's because – why? Because years, all the debates that we had on the show, and I kept telling you, Marcus Mariota isn't a starting quarterback in the league. And I got hammered by everybody. How dare you talk about Marcus Mariota because he's not a starter. That's why I said you bring a guy in here to push him, and that's what they did, and look what happened. That's what I was lobbying for, and the backups they had here were not good. No offense, nice guys. Blaine Gabbert and Matt Cassel were not good. They were bad. They were done. Matt Cassel was done. Absolutely, and Blaine Gabbert is—he's just not good.
We know the history, but that's just all I'm saying with the question about Mariota is there's always a job for somebody that's a passable starting quarterback and slash a pretty good backup quarterback. So I'm just curious about his future. Heck, maybe he just stays with the Raiders for another few years as the backup. I don't know.
I don't know. Could somebody make him a starter? I guess. I don't see it. He's just not a starter in the league. I mean,
well, there's a lot of starters who, quote, aren't a starter. We could name off six or eight. There are a lot of starters who are starting in the league that aren't a starter.
Correct.
But they're starting.
I agree. I totally agree.
So all Mariota, right. That's all I'm saying, is Mariota could be on that list just as easy as he could be on the list of good, steady backups.
Certain.
They're really one and the same.
Yeah. All right, we'll come back. We will catch up with Tim Hasselbeck on the other side. We'll ask him these questions and more as we get ready for Wild Card Weekend. The Titans will sit and wait to see who their opponent is, but we'll talk to Tim next here on Darren Donica Chase, ESPN 102.5 The Game. Predators tomorrow night back at Bridgestone Arena. They'll take on the Buffalo Sabres. 7 o'clock puck drop, 6 o'clock pregame here on these airwaves. And you know when there's a Predators game. It is during the week. You get Preds Pick to Click, where you call in to Robbie and Rex Road at 8:45 tomorrow morning, and you pick a Predators player. And if they score a goal that night, you'll win a pair of tickets to a future Predators home game. So keep that in mind for tomorrow morning at 8:45. By the way, the listeners have been doing really well, and it's been pretty easy with this team, right, to come up with some names because the way they're scoring and some of the seasons some of these guys are having, you ride the hot guys, and so far it's been working.
That also is something I picked up on this morning. Maybe it just hit me the wrong way, but of course, Cale Makar, who is a fantastic talent, we know that, he had the highlight goal. That was an incredible goal that he scored to tie the game. But Roman Josi ends up the night with 3 assists of his own, and all the talk is about Makar. Mm-hmm. And so I'm just thinking, hey, hello. Like Roman Josi, hey, over here. Alvin Norris trophy guy too. Hello, I had 3 assists. That move that Roman Josi made on the first assist to Luke Kunin, that was a great move. That spin move that he's been making off of the wing, he's done that several times now. How many times he goes from the top to the bottom. But Makar, he's got such flair and explosiveness. I understand why people notice him, but I hope Josi doesn't get lost in the discussion. But somehow I could just kind of feel it. Makar is getting all the headlines. I think Yossi's a better player all around.
Well, I mean, we watch him night in and night out, so we understand that we're going to feel that way in this market. But there's no doubt Makar's goal last night was dirtier than Cinemax at night. You know, that was that was dirty. That was just, I mean, that was disgusting.
It was unbelievable.
You know,
that was a great goal.
But look, they're the two best. They're going to battle each other all year. I mean, they're going to be two finalists for the Norris. I don't think there's any. I mean, something unless something really, you know, somebody misses some extended time. But if those two guys are playing the rest of the year, there's no doubt they will be two of the three finalists for the Norris. All right, let's bring in our buddy Tim Hasselbeck. Every week he's brought to you by Red Spirits and Wine in Bellevue. Tim, yesterday when we got off the air, we thought Joe Judge was going to survive in New York. They're going to keep him. They're going to retain him. And today when we got on the air, he's no longer the head coach in New York. What happened?
You know what, to be honest with you, if the season ended 3 weeks ago or so, he probably would still be the head coach of the Giants. You know, from my understanding, you know, ownership was obviously not happy with how the season went, but they weren't ready to make a move. And I think things change. You know, the bizarre rant talking about you know, player, him talking to multiple players would rather be there than where they are making more money was, I mean, I don't know how else to say it other than it's just a lie. And then, you know, kind of the interactions and shots at other teams to, you know, how the season ended. And the fact that I think as you take a step back, they weren't, you know, an ascending football team. I think they basically were like, this is embarrassing. Like, this isn't going well. This is embarrassing. Maybe we do need to make a move right now, even though we don't want to, which I think is what ultimately ended up happening. So, yeah, it's almost like he talked himself into getting fired.
that sounds ridiculous, but I think you may be right.
Oh, look, you can remember the reports. I mean, I think it was Jordan Renan who covers the team for ESPN, but also, you know, I think Schefter had kind of echoed this, that he was going to be safe. Like, they basically were like, look, Daniel Jones is going to be back. Joe Judge is going to be back. Like, you know, Jones will be healthy by the time training camp rolls around. And, you know, we're gonna try to get this thing figured out. Like, I think that was the plan.
Why, though? Why would they, like, everybody's...
You know, because listen, I think ultimately, like, that, what you have to realize with, like, that, you know, that organization is they... You know, I think they've kind of gotten a bad rap because the last, you know, few hires have not worked. It didn't seem like they've gotten the quarterback situation right. It was kind of messy with how, you know, it kind of ended with Eli. That's a good organization. Those are good people that are not looking to overreact to every single situation. And, you know, if you are, you know, going to be the head coach or the general manager, you know, in New York, you know, that you're going to face some things that you just don't face as the GM of the Arizona Cardinals, you know, like, or, you know, the Tampa Bay Buccaneers for that matter. Like, there are things that you're going to face. And I think that, you know, because of that, you know, the team and the leadership there wants to have more patience with things rather than, you know, totally react to every time it seems like it's not going well. So that's why I think ultimately, you know, they were going to be willing to probably see it through.
How bad was the, or I guess just give us some insight, because everything you read is Brian Flores and Chris Greer, the GM, they were butting heads. They just weren't seeing eye to eye. So how much truth is there to that, and why did they choose Greer over Flores? Because I think everybody was pretty shocked. I mean, I've been sitting here for the last couple of years saying Brian Flores is a good coach. I mean, won 10 games last year. They didn't get in the playoffs. He won, what, 8 of their last 9 games this year. And I know they didn't get in the playoffs. Why isn't he still their head coach?
I think a couple things is, you know, you can be demanding without being demeaning, which I think is an important characteristic, you know, or, you know, trait to have if you're a head coach. And, you know, the way that, I mean, just to say kind of as clearly as I can, I think the way that assistant coaches were treated there, meaning, you know, whatever, pushed to the side, let go, moved on from, however you want to put it, it just doesn't sit well. And then you take that, and then take a disagreement on the quarterback situation, how to handle it between, you know, a guy that was drafted really high and a guy and Deshaun Watson who might become available. You know, it just, I think those two things are why Brian Flores is no longer the head coach of the Miami Dolphins.
What job, we talked about Minnesota. It's pretty interesting how it all played out, although they did clean house with the head coach and GM in Minnesota, head coach GM out in Chicago. Do they really any great surprise there? What do you think is the best job opening, and what do you think is going to end up serving as a wow? I mean, are we going to be wowed? It always happens, right? Like the Urban Meyer. Is Jim Harbaugh, is there going to be a wow hire that has everybody talking?
Yeah, I mean, I think there'll always be. I mean, every cycle. I mean, you call it, say, a wow hire. Like there's going to be the surprise, right? Like, I mean, Brandon Staley or, you know, to your point, like Urban Meyer, or, you know, maybe somebody that's been a head coach before that's going to come back in. So, you know, I don't know what fits into the wow hire mode. I think there are certain guys that their names have been circulating for so long that they're going to end up getting opportunities, right? So Eric Bieniemy is going to get an opportunity. Byron Leftwich is going to get an opportunity. Dan Quinn's going to get an opportunity. I mean, you know, Kellen Moore is going to get an opportunity. Josh McDaniel's name is going to come up over and over again. Doug Peterson's going to be back in the mix. You know, everybody on TV seems to be, you know, calling for Jim Caldwell to get another opportunity. Like, there's going to be a lot of guys that whose names you've been hearing. So I don't know that ends up being a massive wow or surprise, but there usually will be one that maybe, you know, was a little bit more unique. Yeah.
All right. I played this game yesterday with Willie and Chase. I'm going to play it with you. Who do you trust more, Stafford or Kingsbury?
You know what? Probably Kingsbury at this point. And I think I've been saying it all year long. Like, as everyone was excited about them, you know, I felt like there needed to be as much growth from him as anybody in that organization for them to be, you know, a better team. Stafford, I just think there's so much pressure on Stafford. Like, he was the missing piece. He was a huge upgrade. And I think if he were playing great with a ton of confidence, then I would trust him because he really is an amazing player. But he's been really bad. And he's played, like, I think he's been playing at a, like, if I were to say, like, all right, is he playing at a winning level? I think there are a bunch of times he has not been, which is a problem considering they have a championship defense.
Okay. Who do you trust more? You'll get a kick out of this. Garoppolo or McCarthy? Meathead, a.k.a. Meathead.
You're not a McCarthy fan, huh?
Oh, you know, we were talking about Hard Knocks. Is like you heard me because you were laughing at it. Because I said he looks like a meathead. He talks like a meathead. I've never been impressed with Mike McCarthy. I've always said he's
overrated. Who do you think he's teaching, like an econ class at Harvard or something? Who do you think his audience is? I mean,
yeah.
Like, what are we talking about here, Darren?
What, Tim, what are you saying? Are you saying football players are dumb? I mean, what are you saying?
No, but what I'm saying is like, if you've got a room full of guys that literally are ramming their bodies into somebody else, you know, every single week for half the year, like, I mean, you know, it's not like you're – you know, you don't have a bunch of Nobel Peace Prize winners, like, in, you know, sitting in the team meeting room.
You're saying they're not building rocket ships?
No, I'm saying they're smart guys. But what I'm saying is like, you know, you are – I just think the audience is – you know, the audience isn't going to be like, oh, this guy's a meathead. Like, look at how hard Detroit was playing late in the year. Like, does Dan Campbell,
yeah.
Like, how would you describe Dan Campbell?
He's interesting is probably the word I would describe him.
I'm not calling Mike Vrabel a meathead, okay? But, like, Mike Vrabel was one of those guys that was sitting in that meeting room. Like do you, like, you know, I don't know. I don't think Mike Vrabel's going to be like, I don't like this guy. He's a meathead, right? I mean, and his team's the number one seed in the AFC. Like, there might be a reason it's translating, Darren. No? What do you think?
I think he's Ed Orgeron without the Cajun accent.
Nah, see, Mike McCarthy's really smart. Like, that's the thing. He's very smart. Just like Mike Vrabel is really smart. So you can kind of be a meathead that's smart. Does that make sense?
Yeah, like, it does.
Absolutely.
You know? Yeah.
So
absolutely.
So do I trust more? I hijacked
you're going McCarthy?
Game. I'm going with McCarthy.
I was going to say, after all that, you better say McCarthy.
Jimmy Garoppolo.
All right, last one before I flip it to Willie. On the Titans front, who do you trust the rest of the way? Because this last game, you could say probably their best game of the season. Moving forward, who do you trust more, Julio Jones or Anthony Firkser?
Oh, Julio. I mean, Julio's issue has been his hamstring. I mean, that's so he looked good, and the fact that he's able to play that game, and then, you know, get the extra rest, like, I would be encouraged by that. Hey, who was calling the game this weekend? Was that James Lofton?
Yes.
Who had the game this weekend? I thought he made a brilliant point. Remember the deep ball? It could have been the third quarter. Maybe it was the fourth, where, you know, Ryan overthrows him just a tad, but, like, he had gotten on top of the defense, and it was probably a throw 45, you know, yards down the field, 50 yards down the field. And James Lofton's like, I'm good. I saw it. He opened it up. I'd get him out of the game. Like, I thought it was a great point.
He did say that.
Yeah.
You're right.
It was the first possession of the second half, and at the time, they were up 21-0. So I think he made that comment thinking that they had the game in hand. It got a little hairy, as we know, after that.
No, it did. But, like, and listen, maybe it was a bit of an exaggeration, but I think the point was, it was like, oh, that's full speed. That's completely opened up. And, all right, now that I've seen that, now that he can get there, let's make sure he can get there in the postseason.
Yeah, because all of us were here going, oh, God, please don't grab your leg. Please don't grab the back of your leg. That's what everybody was doing after that play.
Heck, yeah.
But defensive coordinators had to take note, too, that they see that, right?
Yeah, and listen, every DB, and I think we talked about this a little bit last week, every DB that's going to line up across from him is going to be like, this is Julio Jones. And I saw it week 18.
Tim Hasselbeck is with us. We're talking NFL football. Tim, before I hit you with a couple of football questions, I was interested with your experience on Sunday night. You're doing the Sports Center with Scott Van Pelt. You're preparing, I'm sure, in some room for what was a great day overall. But all of us were in the moment. We were watching this incredible game. And I'm just curious your perspective, because all of us are sitting there going, God, I want to hear what the coaches had to say. Go to the press conference. Everybody on Twitter saying, please, I'm dying to see the press conference. And Scott Van Pelt, I'm sure you guys are in the moment. You're live. You're trying to figure out how to filter through all of that stuff. What was that like?
Yeah, you know, what's funny, you're right, because we kind of were like, yeah, we'll touch on that game because, you know, it was win and in. And I'm not making this up. About, I don't know, an hour and a half before the game ended, you know, Scott and I are watching it together, and he's like, this sets up for a 29-29 tie. and I, you know, I think it was kind of one of his ways of just kind of being funny in the situation. And then, you know, because he comes on immediately after, especially since the game was going late, you know, he's getting ready for the show as we're watching it. And it's like, oh my gosh, like, this is actually going to happen. And I think, listen, what I thought was happening was the Raiders, when they realized that the Chargers were not taking their time out, I think the Raiders were like, you know what? Like, let's just bleed this down. Like, we're okay here. Let's just not lose.
Yeah.
I think that's what they were thinking. And I know some of it kind of lingered out, you know, kind of leaked out afterwards. But when they called that timeout before third and six, I think it was like 7 seconds left on the play clock. You know, I think if they don't take that timeout, and, you know, even if the Raiders get a first down, you know, maybe not a 12-yard run, but even when they get a first down, I don't think they're going to be in any type of hurry at that point. And I think that at that point, you know, the Chargers maybe would have figured out what the plan probably was for the Raiders.
But this is what I think is very difficult for you, the analyst, where you have everybody on Twitter floating out all this information. Some people have very good points. And these, a lot of people, are people that I'm following, not just, you know, Joe Fan, because Joe Fan always has his opinion or her opinion. But these are people, like, in the moment making a case for something, they're sure that they're right. But as time goes by and you get more removed and you think about it, they're dead wrong on what they were putting out. There were pictures of, hey, the Chargers didn't have enough people on the field, or one guy wasn't covered, when really, when you look, yes, the guy just wasn't in the TV shot. You know, all of these things get thrown out. So you're on TV, you know, with a pretty big audience, having to process this in the moment. And not only that, but you've been preparing to recap, like, six football games.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, here's the lesson I probably here's what I do know that I have done. I guess I've been doing this 13 years now. Like, if I'm going to be wrong on something, I'm going to be wrong because it's what I thought that was my idea. You know, so I, you know, like to your point about like, you know, some people saying some things like, oh, they had 10 guys on the field, man, that's when they took a timeout or this and that. Like, if I didn't see it, like, I'm definitely not going to say it. And so for me, that's why, you know, Scott's a good host. And so, you know, like, he maybe sets me up with like, what, you know, what did we just watch? You know, like something like that.
Yeah.
You know, I could stay right where it's like, look, this is what I saw. Like, I saw the Raiders slow down. Like, the Raiders were slowing down. They were not taking timeouts. The Chargers originally were not taking timeouts. They were around midfield. It makes no sense to kick a 57-yard field goal, you know, inside of a minute in overtime to try to win a game that, you know, getting it blocked and having it returned, like, that would be a problem for you. So, like, I think it was clear what we were watching, and that's not to say we know exactly what, you know, was going through, you know, Bisaccia's mind, but at least, like, there was evidence of they were slowing that down.
I in the aftermath, I do wonder what the fallout is. I look at the Chargers and the Colts, and if I am in those organizations, I'm saying, how in the world did our teams not get in there? We are clearly better than the Steelers and the Raiders, but we're sitting at home right now and they're in. Would you agree?
There's no doubt. And truthfully, I think both teams would have been really dangerous in the postseason.
Yes. If I'm the Chiefs or the Titans, I'm like, thank you. I'm glad you guys were out of the dance.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think the fallout, Willie, ends up being this. There's got to be some I think the aggressiveness – look, the aggressiveness hurt the Chargers. Like, they went for it in their own end way too early, and it ends up you know, they're fortunate it ends up being 3 points, but that's the game. Like, that's the ball game, 3 points. So, you know, one of the things you have to think about when, you know, everyone does, like, the aggressiveness and analytics and things like that is just the personal, you know, experience of, like, how deflating it is when you don't get a first down in your own end. You know, like how do you measure that? And, you know, how do you measure the frustration that comes along with it for a defensive player who was just out there, you know, and now all of a sudden a quick three and out with a turnover and downs in your own end? Like, there are other factors to just, like, you know, the percentages of, you know, likelihood to score the rest of the game. And then for the Colts, look, there's just going to be so much pressure, not that there wasn't already, but there's so much more pressure on Carson Wentz because he's going to be their quarterback next year because of his contract. And so just he doesn't have those same assurances for 2023. And so the pressure and the focus on it is going to be magnified.
All right, last question. You're the Titans. You've got four possible opponents. You've got the Patriots. You've got the Steelers. You've got the Bengals. And you got the Raiders. Who would you not want to play if you're Mike Vrabel? Who would you least like to play? Not that you would fear any of them, but who's the toughest opponent out of those four?
You know, I think the Patriots could be a pretty tricky matchup for them just because of the physical nature, you know, of New England. Look, I think we're at this point, truthfully, and, you know, I had someone say, like, oh, it's a really tough draw for the Bengals. It's like, well, the Bengals, if they didn't get the Raiders, they were getting New England, you know? And, you know, somebody, you know, like, the team getting New England, like, they could have the Chargers. Like, I think in the AFC, like, Pittsburgh's the weak link. But, like, other than Pittsburgh, I think it can go any direction. I really do. And, look, well, the Titans are the one seed. And, you know, Davis Mills, you know, had them, you know, within 3 points. Like, I just
had him sweating for sure.
Yeah, I just think that in the AFC,
Like, there's not an easy draw outside of Pittsburgh. There's not. And so, you know, ultimately, you know, I think the challenge is, and you kind of, you basically said this, Willie. Think about this. Right now, like, you know, the team's off and resting, and, you know, I'm sure they'll do some stuff, but, like, you don't know your opponent, right? So as much as you want to get a head start, you know, you're going in four different directions.
By the way, they're saying it's supposed to be, like, one in, like, movie Planes, Trains, and Automobiles. What do you think the temperature is? One. It's supposed to be, like, right at zero. Maybe the coldest game, one of the coldest games ever at Orchard Park.
Here's a funny Saturday thing, night. Though. I don't think that that's going to impact the game. I don't think cold is going to impact the game.
Okay.
I think wind is the issue.
Yeah.
Like, cold's fine. Wind is what makes it so you can't throw the ball. Last time Josh Allen played the Patriots, he threw it 47 times. So, like,
Mac Jones threw a three.
Well, that was the first matchup.
Well, that was the first one in the wind game. Yeah.
In the wind. And so, like, if it's not windy and it's just cold, you're going to see guys with no sleeves and you're going to see Buffalo throwing the football.
Who's on?
That's interesting, too.
Yeah.
Because that game that they lost, the Patriots up there, a lot of throws that Allen made were affected, for sure.
Yeah, and who won the second game? The Buffalo did. And listen, it wasn't like it was 80 degrees. I mean, it was cold in New England that day.
All right, last thing real quick. Who's on upset alert? Who are you picking that's an underdog in the game this weekend? Who, wild card weekend, tell us a team we should pay close attention to you think they pull off the upset.
Niners.
Okay. Oh, boy.
And it's not because of Mike McCarthy, even though he'll get blamed. I just think, like, look, that's a fast, slow defense. And the thing that the Niners do really well is misdirection. Misdirection run game, misdirection play action passing game. You know, and so, you know, when you play a fast, aggressive defense and you get him going one way and just kind of, like, that to me, I think it just ends up being a bad matchup. As soon as those matchups were posted, My first two reactions were this. I was like, ooh, that's a tough draw for Dallas. And then I was like, man, Tampa got it easy.
Mm. Yeah. Yeah.
Agreed.
By the way, Deebo Samuel is ridiculous. He's
good.
Really, really good. Really
And he's
good.
Got a coach that does a good job of finding ways to use him, you know, because, like, how many guys, and not that there's a ton of guys like him, but there are guys somewhat similar, and they never end up in the backfield.
Yep. I think it's going to be a fun weekend for sure. Tim, appreciate the visit. As always, have a good week, and we'll do it next week.
Sounds good. See you guys.
All right, Tim Hasselbeck. Always good to catch up with him talking Titans and NFL. And every week he is brought to you by Red Spirits and Wine in Bellevue. I think if you ask enough people, probably the 49ers, I would say, would end up being – the favorite of on, you know, Dallas being on upset alert. Don't you think? That game. I'm not surprised.
I'd have to say so. That one, maybe the Patriots would be right in that mix too. But
Patriots would be in there in maybe Arizona, maybe?
Oh, I think you can't write them off. They've got a shot, no doubt. Especially when you look at the struggles that Stafford has been having, as Tim just chronicled.
Well, and the fact that are they going to get J.J. Watt back? Which, if you look at all the numbers, when J.J. Watt was there, I think that, you know, that's when they were 7-0.
He could tip the scales a little bit.
Yep, their defense was completely different with him than without him. So, I don't know.
If he's healthy and feeling good, he could make an impact on a game. There's no doubt.
No doubt. All right, we will come back and begin the next hour with our man Max Herz, who crushed it last night. We'll get into that Predators game and tell you about his experience, his first NHL experience. But first, Willie, you're going to give us a word about Lee Company.
All right, let's talk Lee Company, 615-567-1000. We just hinted at it. They're a big sponsor of our Nashville Predators hockey radio coverage. They're a big sponsor of the Nashville Predators when you come down to Smashville. And Bridgestone Arena was the place to be last night. Wow, what a great contest. Nashville winning in overtime. against one of the heavyweights in the Colorado Avalanche. We're going to talk about it in the next segment. Lee Company, you'll see the display all over Bridgestone Arena. And what they do are an array of services. It stems from your heating, your cooling, your plumbing, and electric, the basic four things that keep your house running smoothly. But also, they've got general maintenance. You got a problem at work, got a problem at home, you need something fixed, call Lee Company. They've got the general maintenance team ready to go for you. 615-567-1000. That's 615-567-1000. Or go online at leecompany.com, make that online appointment, and then you're good to go. Finish your work for the day, then go watch the games that you want to watch. Lee Company, let their decades of expertise go to work for you.
Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. The rush of racing? Nothing beats it. But Chumba Casino comes close. Chumba's got fast spins, fun games, daily bonuses, and all the action you can handle. Now that's a ride. Ready to hit the throttle? Get in the driver's seat and head to ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
Sponsored by Chumba Casino. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.